Philip Pritchard better have the gloves on. He better be ready. Better be close to that rink, because the Cup will be in the building tonight, and it better not be late. It better be punctual. It better be on time, because if it's not, that would be great for us, but not so great for Bettman and company. Game
Champagne
5 Cup Final
room
tonight.
Philly. Champagne Room Philly better have the Cup in order. Should be there now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Should be there right now in the
building. What would get him fired? Late again?
If he was gooned somewhere.
Well,
the Cup was seen with him, and it's nowhere to be found.
See, gooned is, this guy has to go wherever it goes, so you're going to enjoy yourself. Like my
understanding, but I'm talking about if there's a TikTok saying, Jerry Bettman's on the ice, and I'm having wings and beers with Philly Pritch. And he's just enjoying himself, and he's nowhere to be found at the rink. That's where he would run into problems.
Yeah, that's where you get into some. But, I mean, these guys are professional partiers. My understanding is it's not just Phil. There's another guy, too. The other guy, I think, is good on the guitar.
He's an Overdrive
like professional
fan, too.
Yeah. I think they're awesome guys. They just, like, enjoy themselves and just party away. That's it.
Yeah, it's quite the job, man. The keepers of the Cup. And, like, this is really it, though. The other stuff, you got to fly it around. It's got to be at the Hall of Fame when it's supposed to be at the Hall of Fame.
But, Hazy, when you're going to party, the question is, how involved are you allowed to get when you're the keeper of the Cup? Are you like, I'll just have one beer and then I got to take it easy? Or do you just, maybe it's a Dear Hazy B. Does the keeper of the Cup floor it and he's a part of the party?
Well, I'll give you the answer right now. Here's the analogy I would use. It's as if you're a photographer at the wedding or the lead singer of the band at the wedding.
No
right.
way. I'm telling you, you're another, like, you're supposed to be there. You're supposed to make sure that somebody doesn't grab the Cup and throw it into the pool.
Like, that's what I'm saying, Noodles. But, like, because if I hired, we've all been married. Yeah. We've all gone through the process. If I hired a photographer and she was buckled, I'd be like, are you crazy? Have you lost your mind? Like, we're paying you a fortune. Have a couple of drinks. Like, we'll supply you with dinner and all that. That's the way it goes. But if you are shattered with the camera upside down and you're on the dance floor.
Flurry.
Yeah. You know, like you're the lead singer of a band. We had a band at the wedding and they were great. But if the lead singer by the third act couldn't sing, I'd be like, I'm not paying you anything. You're killing me here.
Dude, yeah. That's how Adam Sandler got his gig, didn't it? Like the guy was gooned and Adam Sandler took over in the wedding singer.
The wedding
singer. That's right.
Yeah. Who was it? Like Steve Buscemi or something? Was the lead
I don't
singer?
Know. The guy was just totaled and right. I think Adam Sandler took over. But I think he gets involved. It's not like this guy's driving his Hyundai Pony around with the Cup. There's a full driver. He's just got to make sure nothing stupid happens. I bet he gets heavily involved.
It's not his party, though. Like, what if they don't want you involved? You know, like, what if it's your Cup party and you're like, Phil, I'm sorry, man. I don't want you in here.
He's doing shots in the middle. Like, he's
you're just freaking me out.
Yeah.
Like, come
on. He's dirty dancing with your aunt in the corner and just has an absolute grind on. With the gloves.
With the gloves on, of course. Always.
He's got the gloves on.
Yeah. Oh, the gloves on, and he's club pro guy in the range, and he's just loving life.
Yeah, that's when you might have a dust up. There's Phil Pritchard. Listen, he's a beauty. He's a legend, and I don't know how you get to that job. You know, like, I don't think you can meet with a guidance counselor when you're in grade 8 and say, I want to be the keeper of the Cup.
Yeah, you're
not
kind
sure
of
that would
He's been doing it for a while. Like, he's been doing it 30 years, hasn't he?
It's been a long time. Yeah.
Oh, it's been a while. But the thing is, though, those guys in Edmonton have been the problem. Like, when they won those cups, like, the Cup was doing some strange things back in the day.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. I mean, it's well documented. And they're not alone. You think the Islanders before them were just having a cocktail party?
You think these guys nowadays are anything different? I'm pretty sure once the nonos and nanas and grandma and grandpa go home after eating spaghetti out of it, it turns into a sideshow. I'm pretty sure.
I wouldn't expect anything less. I mean, you get it for what, a full day? Or like, is it a day and a night and then the next day it leaves? I'm not sure what it is.
Depends on like how much. Like I went to, I think, the Wizards, Ray Whitney's, and that, like, that was a ended up being a pretty good time. I think there was a fight there too. That's the thing. Like there was like a fight broke out later or something. Like there were some people that were like maybe crossed the line. I can't remember how all hell broke loose, but there was like that's the thing. That's another thing. Like depends on how big the party gets. Like I remember, I think I had another buddy who had a party in like his small town's rink, like the actual rink. Like there was no ice and they just close that off and all help. And then you had kind of friends making it in there. That's where it gets into trouble, right?
Well, you do hear great stories of that with like the Cup or any other championship where regardless if it's a big town or small town, generally it's more conducive to a smaller town, right, where you bring it back and, hey, everyone come down and see it. You know, like if you're from a small town somewhere in the prairies, it's like, hey, there's going to be like 1,500 people rolling through here. Cool. Come by. We're sitting out here for 5 hours, and then you chisel it down to a private endeavor a little bit later at night. But yeah, it's it could be handed out tonight. Like it'll be in the building tonight, and it feels like the momentum is leaning towards. Like I'm not hearing too many people thinking Tampa's going to win tonight. Feels like a lot of people are almost committed to this idea that Colorado's got it, and I'm not quite there. I mean, that's 2 overtime wins for Colorado.
Yeah.
This series could be drastically different. Tampa gets a bounce in game 1 and game 4. They're going back there thinking we're flying home with the cup.
Right.
So it's been a close series game 2 notwithstanding.
It just seems, Hayes, and my only experience is against Detroit where we knew that they were older, and I believe game 3 went to triple overtime. And I think if we had won that game, it might have gave us some life, and it might have made them feel just a little bit older and given us the 2-1 series lead. And things might have been different. Who knows? Probably not. But it seems like with all Tampa's been through, going to the Cup and winning it 2 years in a row and going back to the finals, and every shift someone seems to be running down the aisle into the locker room. They're hurt. They're busted up. When you lose a game like that and you're going all the way back to Denver, I don't know. I actually think it's going to be a lopsided victory for the Colorado Avalanche tonight.
You think it'll be a blowout? See,
I just think it'll be 4-1, 5-0 type of thing where it's like they understand they have an opportunity. They've been great at home, obviously, and it's their time to just slay the dragon here and get it done. I think it'll be a decisive victory for Colorado.
Is this weird to say, but is this a must-win for Colorado? Like, do you not want, like, now all of a sudden you don't want to be, hey, we lose tonight, going back to Tampa for a game 6. Like, you want to put them to bed tonight. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I was thinking about this morning. Like, Colorado has all the cards. They've got 3 opportunities to win the cup. You don't want to start messing with it, though. That's the thing. Like, you give Tampa, they're on the mat right now. You give them life, they might get up.
Absolutely. Like, it's not literally a must win, but you could make the argument figuratively it is because of what you said. You're flying back. And the nature of your competition, I think it's even more applicable here because it's Tampa that we're talking about, because of their history, because of what they're capable of and what their goaltender is all about.
Right.
Where you chisel it down and all of a sudden you look at it and you say, man, that Vasilevsky, could he steal 3 games? I don't know. But if they win tonight, could he steal 2? Yeah. I could see that. You know. And then if it goes back to Colorado for a 7th, then
like,
it's almost
I don't
like
want that guy.
It's all, you know, everything's thrown out the window.
Exactly.
Right? Then it's like the St. Louis series where they go to Boston for game 7 and they win that. And I remember thinking, oh, Boston's in the driver's seat, it's at home, and they went in there and they you know, scored early. I think Petro got on the board quick.
Yeah, and then Bennington shut it down. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, so, yeah, I think I'm sure it's not something you want to commit to, I wouldn't think, mentally if you're Colorado. Like, if you're Jared Bednar, you don't want to have nervous energy saying, guys, we got to win this tonight. Like, we don't want – but it's got to be an elephant in the room. Like, they have to be well aware of letting these guys up off the mat because of who you're dealing with.
I just kept thinking about today. I can't imagine – the amount of distractions going on with these players' lives right now just to get to the rink, right? So it's game 5. Nowadays, the younger athletes, their parents, their, you know, whoever else
whole
is
nine.
In town.
Whole
like
nine.
The whole nine. So it's tickets. It's if they win, you got to have, like, you do have to have, like, some things planned. So you know, at what level do is Landeskog asked, okay, if we win, what is this? What do you want to do? Like, there's a lot of different things that come with this. So I can't imagine the amount of anxiety, and it should be a positive anxiety, that those players are going through this afternoon. You have to be laying there. If you're Nazem Kadri, you're laying there for your nap this afternoon going, I can be a cup champion tonight.
And I guarantee you, Noodles, you just mentioned Kadri. I guarantee you if they win the cup tonight, he goes full Larry Murphy in the media after. I guarantee there'll be a pot shot at Toronto. Remember Larry Murphy won the cup because he got booed out of Toronto? And he said to Ron McLean, he said, this is for all the great fans in Toronto. And I think he had a smart-ass comment after that.
Yeah, but I don't think Kadri has any ill will towards the fans in
Toronto. Oh, it won't be about the fans.
What's it about, Hayes?
About Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan. That's who it'll be directed towards. Because the fans love Kadri. There were fans that were split in terms of whether or not you could trust him and all that. Because, listen, what he did was he got suspended twice in the same part of the rink.
Back-to-back suspensions, which is still crazy. It's still crazy.
It is crazy. And, he's got to own it. He did it. It's his reputation. It's on his resume. But this city loved that dude. They loved the way he played. He was tough because he's not a big guy. He's really not. And yet he'd fight anyone, he'd hit, he played with energy, he was homegrown, a drafty. You know, you go down the list of the reasons why I believe the Maple Leaf fan base loved him and supported him.
Right.
It's an interesting question, though. Like, if he's going to say something, it will be directed at Dubas and Shanahan. He may not name them individually. He may just say,
I guarantee he takes a shot, though. I guarantee.
Really?
I wouldn't put it past him either, man. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He always has.
But here's the thing. Why? You know. Like, you have to know. Why point it out? The greatest thing would be to not say a word. Like, he's won. In the end, he's won in that
Noodles,
situation.
I get it. But sometimes there's just something in his head. He's one of those guys where there's some people that say, I don't want to go play in Toronto. It bothers me. The media, blah, blah, blah. He loved every single thing about playing hockey here. He loved the attention. He loved the fan base. They loved him. He loved Saturday night, hockey night in Canada every Saturday. He loved everything about being a Leaf. He did. And then when they decided that he was not going to be a part of the equation, he said, you know what, I'm going to go show you. And he did. He did.
He was broken. He was broken.
He nixed the deal in Calgary, not because he had an issue with Calgary. He was hoping that was it and the Leafs were going to have to keep him. I absolutely believe that. And the Leafs, within an hour, said, all right, we'll find somewhere else. Right?
Yeah.
Which, again, then they make the deal they make, and they got to live with the deal they make. But remember, he was at the Raptors parade. He was the Leaf representing the Maple Leafs at the Raptors parade. And he felt like they absolutely ripped
skewered
his heart out.
Wall squad induced?
Yeah, wall squad deuce and toss all the way to Denver. And
well, either way, you know what? If this guy wins tonight, he might take a shot, but I think people will know. And how many times have you had that conversation, I guarantee, with your friends who are Leaf fans and stuff about the Kadri trade, about what this team could use? Well, geez, they could use a Nazem Kadri type. Like, that's, we've had that conversation since he's left, have we not?
Yeah, of course. And look, like, the deal, it's an awful deal in retrospect, but, like, Kerfoot is not a bad player.
No, he's a good player.
He's not. He's a serviceable, good depth piece. So it's not like they got nothing for him and they just gave him away.
Right.
And it turned into, them taking multiple steps back. They're a better team today than they were a few years ago. You would know it based on the playoff history. But I believe that, and I believe in the growth of the group. But when you consider what he's done, and even if he doesn't say anything, I'd love to be a fly on the wall with Dubas and Shanahan tonight watching it. Guy scores the OT winner in game four. If he comes back and replicates something like that tonight, if he gets on the board in any capacity, that's got to be a tough one to chew on. But that's what comes with the business. Right,
sure.
Like, Shanahan's been the king of the county for, 8 years? There's been a lot of people that have come and gone. He's got things right. He's got things wrong, like anyone else. If you're an executive, that's life. That's the way it works. Yeah. But the ones that kind of get away because you decided to push them away, those probably sting the most. They have to, right?
Yeah.
They have to sting the most.
I remember sitting beside Bob McKenzie that night that that happened, and I remember him saying to me, and he's in the know about stuff that I'm not, and he said, that's probably the end of him in Toronto, I would imagine. I go, what the hell are you talking about? Like a guy that plays hard like that, there's other guys you can't get them to sweat. And he was like, yeah, that's probably, and sure enough, he got traded. I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, but later. Okay, I don't know. Were you at that time, and be honest, I think there were a lot of people going, you can't bring this guy back. You can't flat out trust him. Like, those were dumb plays.
They were noodles, but my thought was, okay, he did it 2 years in a row and he got suspended. There's no way in hell the guy's going to do it again. Like,
he did it again, though.
He did. I know. But you know what?
That's the crazy part. Like, there's no way he's going to do it. Well, a third, no way he's going to do it a fourth time. Well, yeah, he's been lucky enough not to do it a fourth time.
Well, at the risk of sounding like my dad, I'd still have him on my team any day of the week. Like, I'd take my chances. Sorry.
Well, ship has sailed here, clearly.
Yeah, they took their chances with him, and unfortunately, it didn't work out. I think that both settings are, I don't know, better off, it would be the right word, but the Leafs are a better team, and Colorado is on the cusp of potentially winning a cup tonight. So
let's
see
what they got.
Exactly.
Let's see what they have in store.
Exactly.
So we'll continue to tee up Game 5 of the Cup Final throughout the afternoon. The Jays are back in action. Scott Mitchell will join us. We got Alec Manoah on the mound. You see Guillermo Martinez got suspended 5 games for that dust-up with the umpires before the game.
Apparently he made contact. Like, what did he do, push the guy's chest or something? Or
I couldn't see what the contact is. This like, I understand, this is where it gets delicate. I get it, the protection of umpires and referees, and you can't have players, coaches, what have you, getting overly aggressive, and the league is always going to come down on the side of the officials because the officials are representing the league more than anything else. But I got to believe he said something, too. Like, it must have been vicious in there. Was it like a rough handshake? Was that what it was? It was like an overly aggressive handshake? I don't – like, the video, I just – after he got tossed, maybe because he got in his face, possibly, that's where the contact happened, or their chest to chest. But this is the thing. The ump's in, and they're being a hero, too.
Yeah.
Like, what about the ump making contact? Like, I don't know, man. It's – Eddings was so bad. Martinez went out there, gave it to him.
What if Martinez, if there was contact and Martinez, like, embellished and threw himself back? Like, that's the thing. Like, the ump, you're right. Like, Eddings stepped right into him. Like, they were nose-to-nose yelling at each other.
They always do that. So, the umps are always so heroic and, sensitive. And I get it. They get roasted and everyone makes mistakes, blah, blah, blah. But you could diffuse the situation so much easier. But just stepping back, letting the other ump step in and say, take a walk, you're out of here. But he's got to get in his face, and they got to go back and forth. And anyway, 5 games. Goes to hand out the lineup card, and we'll see him in a week.
Dude, I think that's a little much.
What it might be,
Hayes, is sending a message that in the future, the skip is not sending one of his peeps out there to just get it off his chest to be a complete goon and make a mockery of the lineup exchange to start off the night, so it's just not happening. So maybe it's just setting a precedent where it's like, you guys in Major League Baseball, you're not doing this anymore. You get your own ass out there, and you're not sending somebody out there to make a mockery and then leave.
That could be it, or there might have been some language that crossed the line, too.
An aggressive handshake and some really aggressive language.
Like,
possibly.
You know, the F word gets dropped left and right, but you start throwing in some other colorful comments, that might go sideways.
Did you see, what game was it? I saw it quickly last night. There was like a called a third strike out to end the game last night. And it was, I want to say it was, I can't remember. I got to find it. But like the player walking away from the ump was
saying
F this, F that, like your mom, your dad, you.
Ooh,
like,
wow.
And it was caught up on the mic and it was
not good.
No, and far as I can tell, they've kind of let it slide.
Wow.
And that's probably the power of the players' union. Like, don't even go down that road because guys are yelling and screaming all the time. And just because the mics happen to pick it up doesn't mean that you can penalize it more than whatever anyone would say any time where there isn't a mic picking it up. Because that is the thing about technology. Like, if there's a player that says the exact same thing anytime he gets punched out when he doesn't like it, the exact same thing, and it's vicious, but they never do anything about it, but then a mic somehow picks it up, and then they do something about it, he's got a legitimate beef.
Yeah.
Like, I say that all the time. It's not my fault that the mic's around. Like, are you going to legislate based on the technology or based on what's actually said and the feelings of the umpire?
But that's where the fine line is, guys, where you have partnerships with media. You have partnerships with, you know, production teams and stuff. And mics are placed in areas where you want access, but you also have to be respectful of some of the things that, you know, probably shouldn't be going to air, or, you know, shouldn't we all the time. I don't know how many times I've been sitting in a, either in between the benches or up top, and a hot mic picks up a guy going to the bench, you know, F this, or yelling at, you know, either pops a teammate in that. And it goes right into your living room, like, because you can't mute every mic. But the partnerships, you want these broadcast partnerships, but the goal is not to throw players and management and coaches under the bus when they're in the heat of the moment. And then now all of a sudden we put our veil of judgment on them because they're emotional. There's got to be a hand in hand. That's something that has been a really hot button topic for a lot of people.
It's very dicey. Right? And listen, I'm not naive enough to believe that any league doesn't legislate that way. I get it, because a lot of it is the court of public opinion picks up on something.
Right.
You know, there are words that are said all the time in sports. And if there's no mic, no one notices. And I'm sure there are officials that hear it and they're like, I'm not going to bring it up. But if there was a mic, that would be an issue. And then when there is a mic, it is a huge issue.
Sure.
And you hear all the time, you're like, oh, that kind of stuff gets said all the time, but no one hears it's not a problem.
It's all that's what the world is about right now. Who says, who can hear it? Everybody, there's some really nice people. There's high-up people, bosses, CEOs. They go on the golf course. They say stuff. Somebody hears it and doesn't like it. You're done.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, especially when it's on mic and then goes viral, and if it's a celebrity or what have you, then it takes on a completely different beast.
Exactly.
So, anyway, the NBA draft went down last night. It was one of the least memorable drafts, I think, in NBA history. Like, there was some debate over who was going to go first overall, and Banchero ends up going first overall instead of Jabari Smith. That had some intensity to it and some entertainment value. But beyond that, there really wasn't a lot. There was clearly Canadian content last night. The Raptors just stayed at 33. They picked who they picked. We'll get into that. Bobby Marks will join us. But really, it's more about, like every year now with the NBA draft, what's going to happen in free agency. What's happening with the established superstars in the NBA, including this Kyrie Irving story. So we'll catch up with Bobby, get his take on that and more. Game 5 of the Cup Final tonight. MJ is out there. We'll catch up with him. We got Dear Hazy B on a Friday. There's a lot of them pouring in. A lot of people are looking for advice
today. There's some doozies. Some doozies that both of you guys got to share your experiences. I've got one picked out for each of you. And right off the hop, we got to get right to it.
Okay, I like it. All right, we'll get to that a little bit later this afternoon. Overdrive is off and running. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, so the NBA draft went down last night, and as always, some of the suits on these guys, it's the best every single year.
Unreal.
It's the best. Like, Banchero goes first overall. He's in a purple suit. He looked like the Joker, basically, walking around last night.
But what was hanging off of it? There was like
this, that's what I don't understand, Noodles. Like, hockey, MLB, football, basketball, these guys haven't made money in their lives, and they have a $400,000 chain on. Like, does the agents buy that for?
Wow.
And who the hell knows how much money they have to begin with? But it just seems like the agent's saying, I'm going to just front you this, and you're going to hook me up after.
Well, Banchero went first overall. He's making a fortune. Like, he's already, what's he worth? Like, he could walk into any bank in America and say, I want $30 million cash. They'd probably be like, here you go.
Well,
pay us back.
He probably has shoe deals and stuff already done and all of that type of stuff you can get advances for. And I think this year was that first year of that league, that overtime, where it was like the top 30 players in America that were getting paid like six figures. And they're all like 15 years old or in high school. And so it's pretty there's money now to be made before you make it there. And you know, like the NFL, like these guys in college now.
They're making money, man. That's what, like, the report's going to come out what Arch Manning made to go to Texas. but it is going right. to whatever the highest amount you can make. That's what he just made.
Yeah,
I remember when I lived in North Carolina, I went to my buddy. He had a giant flower shop, and I went in the back and I was sitting waiting for him, and there was a dude that was 7 feet tall just sitting around, and I said to my buddy, I'm like, does that guy play basketball for NC State? He goes, yeah, he just kind of helps out around here. I said, oh, yeah, really? And I just said, oh, okay, and I walked out. I was like, I think I know what the deal on that is.
You don't have to put two and two together.
If your buddy from the flower shop was a donor for the team, that kid who's
I don't know. Maybe it wasn't even a flower shop. It was maybe a golf shop. It was a golf shop, I think.
Golf shop. I love it.
Well, think about what's going on. That's against State's big program.
God,
but Duke or, you know, like North Carolina or whatever it is, Kansas, Kentucky, it's probably outrageous. Money for boosters.
What was the movie that Shaq was in? What was
Blue
that
Chips.
Called? Blue Chips. Remember
like
that?
Nick Nolte just freaking on people all the time.
Yeah,
that was a great movie.
There was boosters handing cash left and right.
Oh, that's yeah. Penny Hardaway was in that. Shaq was in that. I don't know who the other guy was. All right, here's Bobby Marks of ESPN. You saw him all over TSN last night up here and, of course, on ESPN with coverage of the draft, and he's back on Overdrive. How you doing, Bobby?
I'm good, guys. How's it going?
We're doing well. It didn't feel like an overly suspenseful evening last night. I guess there was suspense with the first pick where Bancaro goes over Smith. But outside of that, it was somewhat of a formality. That was my read on it anyway. How did you feel about the, I guess, the beginning of the draft, and was there any shock value in terms of who went first?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, certainly the three players, we're going in top three. It's just, I think we probably got caught off a little bit off guard based on Banchero going one and, Jabari, sliding to three. I thought, all three were worthy of the number one pick here. I guess it's a little bit based on preference. I think Holmgren probably has certainly the most upside out of that group, and Smith and Banchero you can put on the court right now. So I thought there would be a lot more player movement as far as from a trade standpoint. And we saw, I guess, a couple minor deals. We didn't see anything big, but it was, not as suspenseful as we thought it was going to be.
Maybe talk about your pick at 33, what you like about him, what he brings to the table, and maybe how far you think he is away from being an everyday guy.
The Raptors you're talking about. Yeah, Coloco.
Yeah, I don't think he's far away at all. I mean, he's not an 18 or 19-year-old. He was one of the – I don't know if I've mentioned, I worked with these prospects before when they interviewed with teams to help them prepare, and I had the opportunity to work with him, and I really enjoyed my time just because – he comes to the States, from Africa. He lives with his sister. Basically, he's been on his own a lot. He was out in California. He goes to the Sierra Canyon where LeBron's kids go. And, he's a shot blocker. I think he just got supposed to put a little bit more weight on. He's a big, he's an athletic big here. Played a bunch of years at Arizona. And I think he's 22 years old. So I don't think it's an 18 or 19-year-old project that you're getting and played in a really good conference. That you're getting right now.
Well, it feels like a prototypical Raptors pick, and I don't know if you see it the same way, Bobby. But I think there's still some raw athletic ability there that they're going to try to grow on. We saw it all over the telecast last night. He didn't start playing basketball until I think he was like 17. At a more professional level. So, and he's from the same hometown as Pascal Siakam, and Pascal's got the same story. Like, his brothers played basketball. He didn't. He got into it, I think, when he was 14. So, is that your kind of read? Like, a lot of length, a lot of athleticism, raw, might take him a couple of years, but the Raptors feel comfortable in a situation like that.
Yeah, a lot of length. I mean, I thought probably a top 40 draft. I think it's, when you get to, 33 in that range there, I mean, I think you're looking at a guy that kind of fits your culture, that fits your development. Maybe not the best player at 33, but a guy that fits all around. You're willing to make kind of an investment in here, and that's kind of how I looked at it.
Bobby, what's your take on the OG scenario here in Toronto? There's been a lot of rumors. I think the other day I was reading about Portland hot on his trail, wanting to make that happen. Just what's your take on it, and what do you think happens?
I just think he's on a really good contract. He's a really good player, and trading him for, I saw the rumors too for the seventh pick in a draft of a player that you're going to have to wait on for 2 or 3 years just didn't make sense right now.
Do you think he wants out of Toronto?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's certainly something to monitor. You know, I mean, certainly you talk to people, you know, around that organization. That's not the that's not the indication. But you know, I mean, we're in the off season, and as you know, everything's kind of, you know, it's a honeymoon period until we start playing again, and maybe we'll see what his role is. You know, for next year. I mean, as I said, he's one of these big wings that's on a great contract here. So I think it's certainly something to monitor. But I don't think it's, you know, I didn't think it was worth moving him for, you know, a top seven pick.
With Bobby Marks of ESPN, I don't think it's ever a good sign of the way your fans feel about the direction of your team when you have to issue a statement after the draft to explain yourself. And that's what the president of the Knicks had to do last night, trying to explain all the different moves.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, Leon Rose, I guess he issued a statement being like, hey, stick with us here. You know, we did this for – we got all these picks coming up, 11 in the first round, 11 in the second round over the next 7 years. We got financial flexibility. So, I mean, that was one of the stories of the night, was the fact that the Knicks were moving around the way that they did and ultimately never ended up picking anyone. What's up with this team? I mean, what's your read on the Knicks and how close they are to actually being competitive?
Talk about.
Well, I mean, I think they're kind of, you know, going against how teams are building rosters, where a lot of teams build them through the draft. You saw certainly Golden State and Boston. I feel like there's kind of some pressure to win now based off what happened a few years ago. I understand when you're picking at 11, if there's somebody that not there that you don't feel, you know, could help now that you move off. I just was, you know, I'm curious to see what's next. I mean, they got three picks. Two of them they'll likely never see, you know, because there's so much protection on it from away in Washington and in Detroit and the Milwaukee ones in 2025. But you created cap space, right? But I don't know, what is that going towards? Is it going towards Jalen Brunson? Probably an overpay for him. Probably not Kyrie. So that's the big thing as far as, you know, what is, we'll see in a week from now or, you know, 2 weeks from now, what's next. But I think when you go through a year where, you know, you're below 500 and you have a lottery pick, there's an expectation that there's going to be a player there that's going to be part of your future. And then when you move off that, I think it certainly leaves a bitter taste in people's mouth.
With Bobby Marks of ESPN, if you had to take a guess at where Kyrie Irving is playing in 3 weeks, what would be your guess?
Brooklyn.
You think he goes back?
I just think there's so much at stake for both sides, right?
Does anybody want the guy?
Well, there you go. That's the thing. Right. No. I mean, sure, if he wants to go to Miami for $6 million, Lakers, I'm sure, I don't even know if Masai would take him for $6 million. But that's the thing, is there's not a landing spot for him at what, you know, at his salary. I think from Brooklyn's perspective, I understand why they're not going 4 years, and they're, you know, if it's 2 years and maybe years three and four based on games played here. But you have to realize what the consequences are going to be if he does go somewhere and leave, let's say, $30 million on the table and goes to the Lakers, because then you have to deal with the Durant factor here. So I just think I think everyone's just got to get through the weekend and figure out what's the best for both sides here, because as you know, like, there'll be consequences here big time as far as if he goes somewhere and then you got to deal with, you know, Durant's future.
And you mentioned the Durant future. What do you think? I was reading that you think he might command the biggest trade package in NBA history if he insists on leaving. Where do you think he would go? What do you think? What's that?
What does that look like? How much is that?
Zach Lowe and I did a podcast this morning. We had fun with it, and we said, hey, you know, maybe Masai calls Sean Marks about Durant, right? So what would that entail? I don't want Raptor fans going crazy. This is hypothetical. So if you're Brooklyn, you're looking for your – hey, give me Scottie Barnes. I probably want Fred because I don't have Kyrie anymore. So that's where you're looking at here, is that you basically, what you do is you look at the top 25 players under the age of 25 and, like, I'll take two of those and a lot of draft picks. I mean, and just kind of build from there, because here's a guy who has 4 years left on his contract without a player option, and when healthy, is an MVP type level player.
Wow.
Do you think Masai would entertain him? That's the ultimate hypothetical.
He did for Kawhi with only 1 year. Right?
Wasn't that much of a price, though, like, with all the respect to DeRozan.
You're right. I mean, this will cost teams significantly if this ever came about.
Wow. Well, I kind of hope it happens, right? It'll be wild. I wouldn't put it past the NBA the way
it
operates.
My wife wants to see me sometime in July, so, like, if it's going to happen, like, can it happen, like, in the next week and everything?
Right. Do it for Bobby and his family, please. All right, man, we'll let you go. Thank you for this.
Thanks, guys.
Bobby Marks of ESPN.
Would you even entertain, like, would Durant?
You'd have to entertain it because of what he said, that he, like, Durant, I guess the deal that he opted into, the problem is the NBA doesn't operate like, oh, I don't have any rights, I guess I'll just come up there. Like, Durant could just say, I'm not coming. Or he gets up here and demands out, then what are you going to do? Like, you need him to be happy enough to play here for the next 4 years. But if he's healthy, which is
why wouldn't he be? Why wouldn't he be?
Who knows?
Canada's not for everyone.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, who knows? I don't know. I can't get a read on him. But you see, it's always the same teams. We're seeing it with Kyrie. Lakers, Clippers, Miami. You know, it's always the same six or seven teams that everyone wants to go to.
I love that. I love the tweets. Like, these guys are so in the know haze. But I love when they just come out with the list. Lakers, Miami, possibly Clippers,
Dallas.
It's right. just like, is there any other teams in the league?
Right. You never see Minnesota, Sacramento, Charlotte.
About Phoenix? Phoenix is a pretty good team, aren't
Phoenix,
they?
Phoenix pretty good team. Pretty
they're
good
never
weather
brought
down
up.
There.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They don't warm up a lot.
It's where a lot of the guys want. It's big cities where the guys can go and that are known as great cities as well, too. It's like that in the NHL. It's like that in all sports, you know?
More so in the NBA, it feels like, but I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just a coincidence, but it would be something you'd have to entertain. Like, if Kevin Durant's available and he says, I'm willing to come up, you have to look into it. I don't know what the price tag would be, because like Bobby said, if it's Barnes, Van Vliet, and, like, you know, three first-rounders, couple of pick swaps, you know, like, that's...
But are you a Durant away from being... Like, you'd need those players with Durant to be...
You know what kind of reminds me of is the Kawhi deal that, you know, he was demanding that they made for Paul George almost. And remember, Masai was like, I'm not buying this, or I'm not paying that, you know.
Right.
And look what it's done for the Clippers. Getting Paul George and Kawhi has done nothing for them. So I don't know. Yeah, you're right, though, Noodles. Like, the idea of Durant with Scottie Barnes and Van Vliet would be great.
Well, we talked about it yesterday. Like, this team needs, you know, maybe the next step after this core grows, you need a superstar to put them over the top. This league is a superstar-driven league. Like, and maybe Barnes gets there, like, as far as, you know, at cream of the crop type of player. But you need one of those guys to be taken seriously in this league, because you look at all the competition. They all have one,
right?
Technically.
Yeah. And, like, Durant's not a young guy. He's had injury problems, clearly.
Right.
But I'll say this, man. Having KD in town would be interesting. Like, they're never – as great as
Burner
Kawhi
counts.
Was, KD's on a different level in terms of, like, superstar – like, popularity. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the way he'd interact with the media up here, him on Twitter, like, everything. He's a different beast completely.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we got to see what happens with Kyrie Irving first. I'll believe it before – you know, I want to see it before I believe it, that he's out and KD's out. They may just return to Brooklyn and –
That's kick in the pills to the ego when you, like, kind of have these demands and you toss out teams that you would want to go to, and they're all like, no way, man.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's
no thanks and no
out.
Way.
It's already coming out. Like, Woj is reporting. He's like, yeah, these teams, they're not interested. They're not interested. Like, it really is a kick to the ego. Like, Kyrie thinks – and when he plays, he's a superstar, but – he doesn't play enough, and he comes with a ton of baggage and a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't put it past him, you know, to opt out and take – maybe he does take the $6 million to go to the Lakers or Miami. Who knows with this guy? You know, like he took a stance on vax. He lost $17 million, I believe, this year, and among other endorsements, I'm sure. Like, I'm not sure money is the highest priority for him. He'll survive if he's only making $6 million. He will. And he's the kind of guy that might do it, like buck the trend and say, forget it. I don't need the long-term deal right now. I'll go sign a one-year deal, and then next year I'll sign a long-term deal. That would be cool. Crazy, but cool. All right, Mike Johnson from Colorado ahead of Game 5 tonight. Johnny will join us in about 20 minutes. Scott Mitchell will join us as well. Jays in Milwaukee playing the Brewers. Alek Manoah back on the mound tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. So the last 24 hours for Aaron Judge and the Yankees have been pretty interesting. He walks off a win against Houston last night. Houston's a great ball club. The Yankees clearly a great ball club. That Yankee Stadium was going nuts, man. When Aaron Hicks hit that home run, it was going crazy. And when Judge walked them off, and he showed a ton of emotion. Like, generally, he's not an overly emotional guy. But there's the Hicks home run. Like, that, like, for, like, Yankee Stadium is an awesome park. And obviously, New York baseball fans are. They're rowdy at, you know, the
that
worst of
times. That looked like October, though, Hayes. That looked like October Yankee Stadium.
Crazy.
That's
crazy.
What I'm saying, man. Like, for like they're picking up on what's going on here with this team, naturally, as they should be. I mean, they got over 50 wins, and it's still in June. But Judge walks them off. That place is going nuts. He's going crazy. And then they had their arbitration set up today. And the reason for this is because of the lockout. Obviously, the arbitration would have happened during the offseason, but because of the lockout – they had to push all the arbitration cases back. So how crazy would this have been? Now, they ended up settling. They settled for $19 million. I think he wanted $21 million. The team wanted $17 million. And you might say, well, why wouldn't Judge go in there and ask for $21 million? Because this year has nothing to do with the arbitration. It's all based on whatever happened prior to March.
Dude,
so in other
that's
words,
what drove me nuts about arbitration. It's like there was these contracts being handed out to a bunch of stiffs. And I'm like, I'm the one that's got to go to arbitration, the only one. And Aaron Judge, of all people's got to be saying, you just can't toss me the 21 out of a sign of, like, good faith or whatever. You're handing out zillions to guys that never played a game in the organization. And you got to think about 17 to 21 for me. That would piss me off, man, like a lot. That would make me think Mets every day. I would buy a Mets hat and wear it around public.
Imagine you showed up at the arbitration in a Mets hat. Now that's
you know that Cohen is licking his chops to pull that transaction off. I guarantee it, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he absolutely would be. I'm with you on that. I mean, he's going to spend money. He's already been spending money. They're adjusting the luxury tax based on him. They know this guy's just going to spend so much money, and Judge would be the ultimate mic drop in a city like that, considering what the Yankees are doing right now and what Aaron Judge represents. But it's just such a uniquely 2022 story because of the nature of the lockout that this guy would go into arbitration if they got in there. How could you stop yourself if you're Judge from saying, okay, I get it. I'm not supposed to bring up anything beyond March of 2022, but are you watching me right now? Like, are you watching me right now? Literally, I walked it off last night. Like, I have an OPS up above 1,100, I believe. I'm going to hit 60 home runs.
It's
like Babe Ruth, Roger Maris, you heard of those names? They're nobodies. I'm going to hit 63. I'm going to pass them both. You know, like I don't know, man. But he settled. Like, what's interesting about it for me is that he actually was like, all right, I'll meet you in the middle, because he must have known the arbitrator was possibly going to lean with the team because it has nothing to do with what's going on this season. So 19 million. I'm not shedding tears for Aaron Judge.
No,
at 19 sheets.
But, man, is he going to get a monster contract? I can't even – like, it's still going to be fascinating to see what he's going to get.
It'll be significant. It'll be 21 when it kicks in. So, obviously, that'll be – he won't be going through arbitration again, though. We're well aware of that. But so that's what he's making this year. He'll be making $19 million for whatever he's about to do. That said, you know, last year Vladdy was not making a lot, you know, relatively speaking, and look at the numbers he put up.
Yeah.
All right, Mike Johnson coming up from Colorado. Game 5 Cup Final tonight. Barry Trotz with some big news today. We'll get into that and what it means for Winnipeg and other teams possibly into the future as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.